You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Losanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 148 of the Fanboy Garage. I hope you all are doing well. We are here another week, another episode. Lots of goodies to unpack. Army of Thieves, new trailer just dropped. We caught that. Stranger Things, season 4, trailer just dropped. We caught that. Venom is coming out next week. We're going to be catching that and so much more. Chris.
Yes.
Where should we start?
I have no idea. Let's just quickly do a quick review of the box office. You know, Shang-Chi, four peats, right? At number one, another 13 million and change. So it's heading towards the $200 million mark, which would be the first movie domestically to reach that mark during the pandemic era. So that's exciting.
Kind of sad when you think about it, though, since these Marvel films were like banging out billions of dollars.
Well, I mean,
but yeah, I mean, perspective.
Yeah,
right?
We're going to have to judge these box office numbers the same way in a lot of ways that you would judge, like, you know, trying to look back, like, with unadjusted for inflation numbers, because, like, it's just a special circumstance. So, like, you know, a movie making over 200 million, and it's probably going to wind up settling in at around like 230 or more. You know, a movie doing that kind of business in this time where you have, you know, there's just a lot of reasons why people aren't flocking to theaters necessarily. Like, that's might as well be a billion-dollar movie, you know?
Right.
Like, I don't know, though, to be honest with you. Maybe it would have because of the word of mouth and stuff, but, like, If I would have said to you, you know, let's just say this was a normal time, and a week before the movie came out, I would have said to you, hey, what do you think this movie is going to do domestic? Like, what would you have thought?
Domestically? I probably would have put it at, probably put it where it's at, maybe.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. I probably would have thought that was the best case scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, not necessarily the best case scenario, because we've seen certainly precedent set with for bigger numbers. But, like, yeah, I would have figured if it was in this $200 to $250 million range domestic, that should be a big success.
That's a win.
Yeah. Now, the, you know, overseas is a different story, because, you know, it's right, and not that it's doing poorly, but it's the total worldwide cum, I think, right now is like 360 something million. Of course, it has not opened in China, and as we mentioned last week, it probably will not open in China, so that, you know, loses out on
right.
a big chunk of change right now, especially internationally, because, you know, China is one of the few international markets that seems to be doing, like, well, you know, relative, because, like, Free Guy has done like 90 million in China.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
Yeah. So, you know, so you never know what, you know, what the case may be with that. But although overall, the movie's going to do, you know, well over 400 million. You know, you have to take these numbers for what they are. You know, so be it. You know, and as time goes on, you know, I think, you know, the numbers will start to slowly grow. You know, we'll start to see, you know, with each new movie coming out, as long as there's no day and date release, I think you'll start to see bigger numbers. It's going to be really interesting to see where all this falls out. Like what is going to be the moment where all of a sudden, like, something comes out and it's like, oh, okay, like, we're back to normal.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to figure out what that is, because, you know, with Shang-Chi, it's hard to gauge, because it's probably doing, at least domestically, what we would have expected it to do in a normal time.
Totally.
you know, maybe with great word of mouth and with the bright buzz, it may have done even better, you know, in a normal time. But, you know, still, it's doing really well domestic. Mm-hmm. So, the overseas markets have been affected more for this type of thing. I mean, you could even see it with, something like Fast and the Furious, right? Which normally
does bigger. Yeah, just make sick money.
Yeah. So
it did make bank, but
not what it, I mean, normally it makes probably what it did, its worldwide number, and I'm not really sure where it's at right now, but its worldwide number, I would bet, is probably somewhere around what its international, like its overseas total would normally be, like in a normal time.
Right.
You know, for that franchise. So it's just hard to say. I'm just like, I'm curious to see, because you got all these movies coming out, like Spider-Man, for instance, right? If Spider-Man winds up coming out in December, that's going to be only in theaters. And, you know, that's a big movie. Obviously, that will probably be, I mean, Bond will be big too, right? Bond is a big property. Bond and Spider-Man, I would think, are probably the two biggest properties that are going to be coming out. Theatrical only, right? Because The Matrix, which I wouldn't put on that level, but The Matrix, which is still a big property, that has a day and date streaming release, right? And Dune as well, right? So, so the only
but you know those two movies are super niche.
Dune and The Matrix,
I think, in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I'm just saying, like, of the so Bond and Spider-Man are major properties, and they're only in theaters. Right. So I think and now Bond is coming up in just a couple of weeks. So Spider-Man has more time. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, which one of those movies, if either of those two movies can actually like hit a mark where you're like, "Oh, like, okay, yeah, this is what it probably would have done," or, you know, relatively, you know, in, it's going to be interesting to see with Bond what the overseas numbers are like for that movie. Because that's another franchise that's very reliant on those overseas numbers. So.
Oh, I have to go see that.
Yeah. Well, I know
you're. I have to see Bond.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, man. There have not been a lot of Bond movies that I have seen. I've seen every one, but there have not been a lot that I have seen in a theater. And in fact, the majority of the ones that I saw in theaters were like Roger Moore era.
Wow.
Because when I was a kid, my parents and we had like some family friends or whatever, like, were Bond people. And so like we would go to see, like, I can remember going to see like For Your Eyes Only, you know, and stuff like that, like in theaters. And actually I saw Never Say Never Again, which was the Sean Connery, the unauthorized one. It was the remake of was it Moonraker or Thunderbolt? Either way, whatever it is, it's terrible. But I saw that in theaters. I remember. But like, yeah, like I don't, that's always been like a home viewing franchise for me.
Gotcha.
For whatever reason. I don't, you know, I just, I'm not sure why. I think sometimes I slot things, you know, in like, it's almost like an association. It's like if I didn't go out to see them regularly as a kid, then for some reason, like, I have spent the rest of my life almost watching them at home, like the way I first saw them.
Yeah.
Type of deal, which is, I don't know, it's kind of a weird thing. But yeah, and then Venom comes out next week.
That's crazy.
Which is crazy to think about. And it's funny, if you would have asked me a month ago if I would have gone to see Venom, that would have been a hard no for me. But I'm actually thinking about it. Like I'm not just thinking about it, but I'm kind of leaning right now towards going.
It's funny you say that, because so am I.
Yeah. And you know what? I actually think the length is playing a role in that decision for me, because it's a short movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like a 90-minute runtime, which means the movie itself is probably like, what, an hour and 25 minutes, maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You have to take out the credits. So, like, that's not a big investment, you know, in time and energy. So even if it's terrible, like, all right, whatever. Like, there's episodes of television shows that are just as long sometimes, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I think the reason it's not even length. I wish it could be something as specific as that. It's just because I want to see how it plays into the grand scheme of things.
Ooh,
if it does,
man, you're setting yourself up for a Mephisto.
I am. You see,
yeah,
I'm balancing that tightrope right
now.
Wow.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The length is not the only reason why I'm thinking about it. But, you know, but it's intrigued me more. The more that I've found myself talking about it, the more that I've seen, the more that, you know, we've seen these things come out and whatnot, the more you see, like, some of the feedback and what, like,
yeah,
it's gotten me a little more
the
like.
The reaction is but again, I, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week. I'm not in the camp of like, oh, I absolutely adore Venom. Like,
of course.
I,
yeah.
You know. I have a feeling that there are lots of people that are like, oh, man, it's great. You know, it was a great first outing for that film, and I'm like, was it?
It's just a weird movie. Again, I still don't know where to place that.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like what it is exactly.
Yeah. Anyways, I want to see it in theaters. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah.
If it does. Because Bond is also a film, and that's off of just pure nostalgia for me.
Sure.
So
I mean, listen, I've seen worse movies in theaters.
Yeah.
Than Venom. I went to see The Adventures of Ford Fairlane in the theater. I went to see Kung Pao Enter the Fist in theaters. Okay. I went to see Police Academy 4 on opening weekend, which is not a bad movie, by the way, but you know what I mean? Like, you get my point. My point is, yes, I
saw a Booty Call.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, like, you know, we don't always go just because we're expecting, like, high art.
Sure.
Is where I'm going with this. So, yeah. I mean, I went to see Superman 4, The Quest for Peace in theaters. Again,
easy.
I was a kid, so I didn't know and whatever. But, you know, it just, there are just certain things that, like, you're like, whatever. I just want to see it because it might be fun and... You know, I don't really care what this isn't going to be one of those movies where I literally do not care what the reviews say. I'm not even going to pay attention to them. I don't care. Like, I'm just going to be in that moment and whatever. If I'll either like it. Well, maybe I won't, because I'm not still, like I said, with the first one. I didn't love it, hate it, or whatever. I still don't know how I feel about that movie. But I have a feeling this one is going to be a little bit more like on the nose. Like, I'm either going to like it or not. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of... Because there's not much room for gray area when you have a movie that's that tight. You know, that 90 minutes, you're probably either going to like it or you're not. So, so we'll see what happens there. I mean, the box office predictions are not terrible. Like, right now, the projections are in the $45 to $65 million range for opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, that's less than the first movie, but man, I'll tell you what, if they do that for a second movie from, you know, based on a film that was kind of oddly received, they should be doing cartwheels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what that budget is.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's tough to say because it's, the length maybe saves it from being.
Yeah.
Like
a bloated pig.
Yeah. Let's see what, there's anything reported.
I mean, I'd venture maybe like 125. I can't imagine it being less than that. Because it did fairly well. And who Ruben, what was it, Ruben Fleischer? Is that the first director?
The guy, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's done much, right?
Yeah, what?
It's like, where did you go, man? They didn't even give you the round two.
Yeah, I don't see anything on
Yeah, you probably won't.
On a budget.
We'll see what the trades say, because they'll definitely report.
Well, yeah,
the first week.
Yeah, once that stuff comes out, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But I mean, the first movie wasn't. I mean, it made a ridiculous amount of money.
Was that like 80? Was that an 80 mil? That's how I feel like the first movie was like made on cheap.
It was like
90.
It wound up. It said between 100 and 115 million. Like the original plan was to have it be lower budget.
Yeah.
And then it just got a little. Which I mean, look, 100 million these days for a special effects film is not bad.
You look at You know. The Marvel films, they're like 225, 250.
Yeah.
On a low end. All right.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So I guess, I don't know. Do you want to talk about the trailers right now?
Or yeah,
do you
want to talk about.
Okay. So I have not seen the Stranger Things trailer yet.
And it's intriguing as hell.
I'm sure it is. I mean,
it really is.
Yeah.
It's very different than for a second, I didn't even know. I was like, what is this Stranger Things? Like, it starts off like in a house and there's I don't know. I guess it's like a haunting or something like that. But it's tied to the Upside Down and it's, I don't know, you know, and Robert Englund is supposed to be in this season.
Right.
So I have no idea what is happening. And I'm cool with that. I'm not actually reading a lot into like plot, if that's even out there. So I would just say it, like when I first saw it, I thought it was like an American Horror Story thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was very different. Very different.
Well, I mean, that's what it should be, right? At this point.
Yeah,
I mean, not necessarily specifically American Horror Story, but like, you know, I don't know how long they intended this show to be. It was 5 seasons, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I would think that you would want to start having different feel because
you kind of have to. You can't do the kids unite. Every correct. Season.
That's where I was going with this.
So old.
Right, and you got to find a reason for them to unite.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, man, season 3 was a banger.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Season 3 was like...
Well, because season 3, they kind of just let fly.
Yeah.
You know, and
so good. I think it was the best season.
And what I like about it, and this is probably why you want to have a different feel, is that it, you know, it pays homage to... It uses its timeline to pay homage to things of the time.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it be pop culture or movie, things that like, you know, the creators loved and they want to pay tribute to. So it would also make sense to keep moving the show along and let the themes fit wherever the time frame is that they're in or whatever the case may be. But, you know, we got some mysteries, right, that we want to solve.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest one is Hoop.
Yeah.
But they did a great job at kind of like wrapping up. You know, seasons 1, 2, and 3, so to speak, and moving people in different places, right? Because they all move.
Yeah.
Out of Hawkins. Well, most of them move out of Hawkins. So the crazy thing is, man, these kids are growing up fast.
Well, because they're at age where, you know, a couple of years makes a big difference, you know?
Yeah, the only one that's not growing up is Steve. That's because they, like, cast him when he already hit puberty. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because he looks super young now, and the kids are looking older than him.
Well, it's that, right. It's just because he... Yeah, he hasn't changed, so the reference is off, and
it's so bizarre, man. It is, but it's cool. It's whatever.
Sure, and look, I mean, these are things they had to anticipate. If they planned it to be 5 seasons, unless they planned on doing, you know, those 5 seasons like one right on top of the other, you know, this was going to happen at that age. Even if it was going to be 5 years, which it's been longer than that. But even if it was just 5 years, let's say they cranked out a season a year, that 5 years was going to make a big difference at that point in these, you know, kids' lives where
that's
they
like
are.
Harry Potter.
Sure. Yeah.
And it was like, before you know it, the kids are all like, you know, kids are like having receding hairlines by the end of it.
Yeah. Well, that's a long series too. Because what was like that, 8 or 9 movies or something? And
maybe it was 8.
Eight, whatever. And over the course of however many years, so yeah, I mean, geez.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's craziness.
Yeah.
All right, and then next trailer is the Army of Thieves.
Yes.
Which we just saw right before we hit record. Yes. So you're getting our first take reactions here. Chris and I don't even know. Well, we have some indications of how we feel about this show.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I mean, you know, Army of Thieves is, for those of you that don't know, is the prequel to Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. This one focuses on, Dieter, right? Was his name the character?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and actually that guy directed this movie as well. So,
did he really? He directed this film himself?
Yes, he did. Jeez. Yeah. God. So, and you know, he was a great character in Army of the Dead. But this movie now, Army of Thieves, is purely like a heist action movie. It's not a zombie movie.
Yeah.
This is at least the majority of the movie is pre-zombies. So, yeah. I mean, look, it looked like a fun trailer. I'm okay. I'm always down for a fun, like, action heist movie. Like I said, I liked the character a lot. He was one of the best things in Army of the Dead.
Right.
Natalie Emmanuel's in it. She's fantastic. I mean, I'm certainly watch it. I'm not like falling over myself, over it. But yeah, I mean, it's fine.
I thought it was all right. I don't know. The dude steals the show.
Yeah.
And Army of the Dead, but like this was like, oh, sure. I almost feel like it was trying too hard, because like the dude that they are robbing is the guy that pulls the team together.
Right. Well, it is a prequel. I mean, look, it's all.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but yeah. Like, it didn't need to be directly connected. Maybe not. I don't know the story.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think they probably want to connect it. It is going to be like this connected universe one. We'll see where they go from there. It is a little, because other than that, like, I would think you would need to do something like that to make it like a true prequel, because theoretically, if you don't have any connection other than character, like a character in your movie, it's really more of a spinoff at that point than it is a prequel, right? You could have almost set it like in any time. It doesn't even matter. It's just like you're basically borrowing a character. So if they want to make it like a part of a universe and part of a franchise and whatnot, it's not a bad idea to have it connect like in that way, and then make it like a true prequel to familiarize yourself with, a little bit more with the character. Because then, I guess, in theory, you could watch that into Army of the Dead. And, I guess it'll make you appreciate the character even more, in theory, anyway. So that's not a bad idea. It is interesting though to have a prequel that does not, to a zombie movie, even though I know they wanted to promote Army of the Dead as like, it wasn't just a zombie movie. It was actually like a heist movie that just happened to be set around a zombie apocalypse. But that's like saying like Dawn of the Dead is, a movie about, consumerism and commercialism set in it, where people hang out in a shopping mall that just happens to be set around a zombie apocalypse. I mean, yes, like there are always going to be things happening in a zombie movie because you have to. Night of the Living Dead was able to get away with it because it was the first, but like you have to have some story, you have to have some plot, you have to have some motivations and for the characters. They can't just be movie after movie of people fighting zombies, right? So get it.
Right.
But this is literally just a heist movie. I mean, imagine like making a prequel to
Furious.
Make a prequel to Night of the Living Dead, but it's just like Johnny and Barbara like on their way to the cemetery and like hanging out and what led to that type of thing. Yeah. Like it's kind of weird, but hey, listen, I don't care. It looked fun, like I said. So,
sure.
Yeah, see where they go from there. And so we also had a chance to, I know you've watched most of Star Wars Visions, right?
Yeah.
I've seen two episodes. I watched the first one, which was Duel, right? The Duel.
Yep.
And I watched The Ninth Jedi. Just because I heard a lot of things about it. So it's an anthology, so it doesn't really matter what order.
Yeah.
You watched them, and so I kind of just used that to my advantage.
Good for you. I'm glad you caught that one.
Yeah, I was like, let me just jump to the ones that right off the bat seem like the most interesting to me. Yeah, and the most... And so I liked the first episode. The animation was cool. really nice.
Yeah,
It had a real just cool vibe to it. But the Ninth Jedi was fantastic. That one, I wouldn't mind if they made that a series.
I was like, that's exactly where my head was at. I was like, this is perfect in terms of like everything that my head wants and my heart wants.
Yeah.
For Star Wars, like skip everything. We don't need to hear about Skywalkers, Kenobis, Vaders, Palpatine. We don't need any of that shit. We just need good and evil.
Yep.
Right? Jedi good, Sith evil, and like lightsabers are lost, and there's someone who knows how to make them, and the Sith are trying to get them, and the Jedi want them to kind of restore their faith, you know, restore yep. themselves. I love that
Great.
Idea.
Great, yeah. And the whole Brilliant thing with the colors and the size...
Oh my god!
Of the blades, like and how
that was like, that was like brilliant.
Yeah,
and I mean it spoke to, you know, that connection to the Force that the Kyber crystals have. Like, there's no one's ever really dove into that. That's like Star Wars lore.
Yeah.
You know, lightsabers are broken, then they bleed when you commit acts against the Force, and I love the idea that. These things were extensions of the Jedi that were holding them. And then you can see, you know, one guy, he felt like he was being pulled down by the rest of the other Sith Lords. And then his lightsaber is purple.
Yep.
As they die off. Like, that is just brilliant stuff, man.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I love the Kara, her name is Kara, right? Or Kara.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because that was Kira was supposed to be the name of Rey initially. That's what she was listed as. So if anyone has seen any of the previs stuff for The Force Awakens, Rey was originally supposed to be called Kira, something like that. And I can see a lot of similarities between that the character that we her name is Kara, yeah. I think.
Although this was... I mean, granted, it's only like a, you know, 25 minute or whatever, 20 minute
yeah.
episode of an anime. But I found this to be a much more interesting story.
So much. So good.
Then, you know, and you know, the unfortunate thing is, and this is all hindsight, obviously, because I didn't necessarily have this opinion at the time, admittedly. But, you know, having seen the sequel trilogy now and, you know, we've had it. Come to its completion and seeing some of this stuff that's happening on Disney Plus, you know, with The Mandalorian and mm-hmm. with like even with this, like there are so many great ideas out there, and it's almost like I really just wish that
yes.
in hindsight, rather than turn to a J.J. Abrams who has a history, you know, when he takes over these types of franchises of using a lot of fan service. Spending a lot of time focusing on homage, right? Spending a lot of time, you know, focusing on the things that made him excited as a kid and things like that. There's a self-indulgence to some of the stuff that he does. I like J.J. Abrams as a filmmaker for the most part, but like thinking about what he did with Star Trek, thinking about what he did with, you know, Star Wars, and even with movies like Super 8, you know, which is a great movie, but like, it, you know, that movie was basically about him. It was about him, not the plot, but it was about like these are the types of movies that he grew up watching, mm-hmm. right? So he wanted to pay homage to that. Rather than that, I just wish they would have gone to a Jon Favreau or a Dave Filoni or both and said, "Here,
Ryan Johnson."
Well, that was after the fact, but even to start this whole thing, just to shape that arc yeah. that would have been that trilogy of movies, to say like here, because these guys understand how to balance. Fan service and homage with like cohesive storytelling that's original at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's not an easy thing to accomplish sometimes. Mm. And it's just like, it's the reason why those sequel trilogy movies have not stuck with me at all. Mm. Like I have find myself having very little desire to rewatch them. Mm. It's not a series that I even think about much anymore. But, like, I spend a lot of time thinking about The Mandalorian. I spend a lot of time, like, I will spend a lot of time thinking about this episode of Star Wars Visions.
Mm-hmm.
I spend a lot of time thinking about The Clone Wars. You know, and Rebels and stuff like that. So, you know, there are so many great original stories that could have been told. And like you see a story like this that easily could have been adapted. You know, you want to have the younger female protagonist, right? The story of discovery and all that stuff. Like this would have been such a better story.
Yeah.
Or something like it anyway. Rather than the rehashing, like the stuff from the original trilogy and getting caught up in
BS, like
parental lineage and it's like you know, sometimes like the original sin, like raise the whatever the original plan was going to be for her parents or whatever, like the fact that in The Force Awakens they even made it an issue was almost like the original sin of that trilogy, because the rest of the trilogy just fell over itself trying to address that.
Yeah.
Right? Because we know what Rian Johnson did, where he was just like, oh, forget it. I don't care about it. It's not important. But then...
I will forever defend The Last Jedi.
No, I get it. But the point is, though, like, as a trilogy now, though, you know, you can't isolate The Last Jedi anymore, right? Because it's a complete trilogy, right? So, unfortunately, you know, you have to look at it and be like, you know, they dropped this little nugget, and then Rian Johnson basically threw it out. And then they went back and doubled down on it even more so in the next movie. Right. It was just like the whole that I feel like that whole trilogy was like the chase to try to chase that Rey parenting story. Yeah, answer that one question. And that's unfortunate. So it's like here you have these liberated stories that can go wherever they want to go, and they can go mark the territory, and that's what's exciting about it. And like I said, it's a great time. I was thinking about this earlier today when I was watching those episodes, because it's like what a great time to be a fan of franchises, right? Like Star Wars, Star Trek, superheroes, whatever. Because like there was a time when we were presented with a version of something, and that's what we had to live with,
right?
You know, whatever, it's a movie or, you know, so like, you know, for me, like Batman's my favorite thing ever, right? When they decided that Batman Returns was too dark, I was presented with Batman Forever and then Batman and Robin, and I had to live with that. You know what I mean? Like that was it. If I wanted to see Batman on film,
the animated series.
Well, they did, but
Batman.
But even by the time Batman and Robin came out, the animated series was done already. So
isn't Justice League Unlimited?
Yeah, probably a little later, but great stuff. But the thing is, like, there was this time where, like that, like Star Trek, like right now, like and to finish the Batman thing, like next year, there's going to be a new Batman movie, right? The Batman, which is going to start hopefully not just a new film franchise, but like apparently its own universe. Right?
Yeah.
Branching out into HBO Max and shows and all that stuff. There's also going to be Michael Keaton's Batman popping up in the Flash movie. Right. And Ben Affleck's Batman popping up in the Flash movie in some way.
Yeah.
It's like there's going to be three different theatrical versions of Batman on the screen next year. And you're going to get the new Batman animated series, right? Batman Caped Crusader, which is just going to be all kinds of awesome because it's co-produced by Bruce Timm, who could do no wrong, and J.J. Abrams and Matt Reeves. So, like, it's just like, man, there's all this, and all these, like, HBO Max shows that are going to spin off, supposedly, from the Batman. And it's like, just for Star Trek, like, I'm a big Star Trek fan. Like, right now, like, there were years where, after Enterprise was canceled, like, that was it. Like, there was nothing for years and years and years until J.J. Abrams did his reboot, whatever you want to call that. Now, though, like, with Paramount Plus, like, there's Star Trek Discovery. There's Star Trek Picard. We're about to get Star Trek Strange New Worlds, right? All new live-action series. There's Lower Decks, which is the animated, like, comedic animated thing. So if you like Rick and Morty style comedy and stuff, like that's the show. There's going to be Star Trek Prodigy, which is an animated thing for like younger kids. And that's growing, right? So, and there's going to still be more movies. They're like remastering some of the older, like the original series movies in 4K now, and those are going to be like exclusive to Paramount Plus, like Star Wars. I mean, again, like you have them, like, you know, whether you liked the sequel trilogy or you didn't like it or whatever, like, but didn't matter because you had The Mandalorian, right? And you're going to have The Book of Boba Fett, and you're going to have all these other Star Wars shows that they're coming out with, and you have Clone Wars, and you have Rebels, and you have now Visions and all of this other stuff. And it's like, man, like, you no longer are like have to be limited to just like, if there's a mistake made, like, you no longer have to live with just that mistake for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. Until somebody else decides to like reboot something or get going, like the years like of between Batman and Robin and Batman Begins, right, where there was no Batman stuff.
Yeah,
the years between Star Trek Enterprise and J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, where Star Trek
like
was
eating
dormant.
At a restaurant, like at a, you know, three, getting your 3-course meal and then eating at a buffet. It's like you eat the three, you eat your 3-course meal and you either like it. Or you don't, and if you don't like it, well, then you don't. Your meal is done, and you're over with it. But at the buffet, you can sample all types of stuff, whatever your tastes are. Hey, I like this. I don't like that. Okay, move on to the next thing you'll say and continue to consume a little bit of that. That's the beautiful thing about what's happening right now. We have access to so much stuff, so many stories and content that's coming. And, you know, hell, you can have chicken 3 different ways, 4 different ways in one sitting.
Right, and you may like all of them, or you may like one of them. Yeah. You may like none of them, but if you know, but there's going to be more coming. So,
right,
you know,
it's super exciting. I mean, Visions was, I'm doing it chronologically, like whatever order, just keeps on one after the next, and for the most part, they're good. I like them.
Yeah,
some of them are bonkers as hell.
Right,
you know, which is just typical stuff, and I have to like disengage my brain because my brain is like, where does this fit? You know what I mean? Like, I try to do the canon thing,
right? Well, they're not supposed to fit, right?
No, I know that's the thing. So I have to. I'm training myself, but like Ninth Jedi was great. There was another episode.
There's one that's set in between. Is it in between? Somewhere like in the prequel trilogy timeline, I saw.
There's one with Boba Fett. It's like the second one.
Oh, really?
Versus the second one. Yeah, I think it's set in between where like there's no more Jedi.
Yeah.
They've been hunted down. Like kid stars in like a rock band.
Oh.
But like Boba Fett ends up like crashing this concert. And like Temuera Morrison is voicing Boba Fett.
Oh wow!
Which is pretty dope. I think it's the second episode, but that's pretty. I mean, that's pretty dope. And I'm watching. I haven't got through all of them. I've got like maybe 2 or 3 more left. There was a crazy one I just watched. It was like a cybernetic boy. It was like Pinocchio wants to become a Jedi. Like, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. It's like Pinocchio doesn't want to be a real boy. He wants to be a Jedi. And he unlocks the Force and he becomes like this, like, you know, fighting cybernetic. I'm like, yeah, sure, it could exist in Star Wars. That's cool. there's some really, really wild ones.
Well, but see, that's the thing though. Like, I think, unfortunately, in the past anyway, and I'm hoping that this is no longer the case, like, people spent too much time trying to fit things into Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, now is the time to just say, the hell with that. We're just going to tell our great stories in Star Wars, and that's it. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a style now. It has... Yeah. It's not even a style. It's more of like a thematic.
Sure.
Right? So you got good versus evil. Okay, check. You have a droid. Check.
Yeah.
You've got stormtroopers, or what looks like stormtroopers, check.
There's always going to be certain things that are tied to Star Wars, right, that are going to be there. But, like, you know, you could tell, you know, a Western, you know, themed movie set in Star Wars. You could do a, you know, like, you could do all these different things rather than, like, trying to say, well, Star Wars is about, you know, Jedis and Jedi lineage and having a parent that is a Jedi master or a Sith Lord or whatever, and then they're the chosen one. Like, that's not what Star Wars has to be. That's what the original trilogy was.
The Skywalker saga.
Yeah, and it's you know, I think that idea of, like, trying to fit things into Star Wars is what the prequel trilogy certainly suffers from, amongst other things, and the sequel trilogy suffers from, too. It's because they were just trying too hard to fit things into what they believed people thought Star Wars was. And it's just ironic that now, you know, the things that people are talking about when it comes to Star Wars are, you know, these things that people thought maybe couldn't be successful. Right. You know, like these side stories,
they're great stuff. A lot of that stuff lives in some of the books that have recently come out. You know, they talk about the adventures of Luke Skywalker, and he, you know, meets people who use the Force, but they call it something else. And there's a whole lot of that stuff that just kind of was opening, you know, sort of opening the floodgates for new opportunities and new ideas. For what we think we know Star Wars to be, and like what it could be for somebody else. And I love this stuff. I love the direction that a lot of this goes. I love the homage that it pays to many of the other films and some of the ideas that we've seen, like stopping blaster bolts in midair with the Force. Like, I love seeing that shit. I love that there so far that there have been lightsabers in every episode. because who cares about politics? You know, it's good stuff. I can't wait to see more of it, and I'm excited to see even more iterations of Star Wars stories, because it's ready for it.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And I mean, it's like what Marvel's doing, you know, with some of their stuff. Even though they're using characters we're familiar with, the styles in which they're telling these stories, and the way that they're structuring their narratives are very different from what we're typically used
to. Yeah, and I think all it takes sometimes is one thing to be successful that carves its own path for people to be, like, going back to Star Trek, you know, when they were developing what became Star Trek Deep Space Nine, okay, which is actually one of my... It's my favorite Star Trek series. It's one of my favorite television series of all time. It was very controversial because the belief was that it went against everything that Gene Roddenberry set up Star Trek to be, right? Like, the whole idea behind Star Trek was you were not supposed to have conflict, like, within your, you know, internal conflict. You know, it was supposed to be like this utopian view of, like, the world, right, where everybody was righteous and all this stuff. And Deep Space Nine was, because it wasn't on a ship, it was on a space station, it had to have conflict, right, because these are people that were living together. You know, like, it was, there was no way to avoid that. And it got into, like, a dark underbelly of the Federation and the Star Trek universe. And I mean, Gene Roddenberry wound up passing away before the series actually debuted, but, like, it took a lot of chances, and it kind of broke the mold of what people believed Star Trek was and could be. And then, like, if you look at the Star Trek stuff that we're getting now, like Discovery and Picard and Strange New Worlds, like, they owe a lot to Deep Space Nine breaking through that stubborn wall of saying, like, no, this is what Star Trek is, and it could never be anything else. And that's what's happening with Star Wars now. Like, you know, with The Mandalorian and stuff like that, like, they're breaking through that wall of saying, well, this is what Star Wars is, you know? And it's, hopefully it's going to open, get some of those creative juices flowing, and, you know, and will lead to some really great storytelling. That, because they're, like you've been saying forever, like, there's this whole universe, timelines that we've never seen, right? That time periods that have never been touched, you know, stories that have never been touched, things that we've yet to see. Like, that's where we need, that's where they need to be. You know, rather than kind of tying everything to the things we've seen already.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we're just shaking it up. I need more of it.
Yeah, well, you're gonna be getting a lot of it, so
I get nervous, and that's that. And then there's the point of like I get a little nervous with revisiting stuff, and like I'm excited. Like, don't get me wrong, like Obi-Wan series, like I'm stoked. I'm excited about it. I love that nostalgia. I hope they put a little edge on it. They have to.
Yeah, probably.
But like, I don't need that show answering questions.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want it to be like we're gonna like help clean up some of the sequel trilogy BS that everyone's been complaining. I don't want any of that. Like, let's just keep it insular. Like, this is a story. This is what it's gonna be, and like, leave it at that. And I don't even want a season two. Like, I don't even know where the story is going. I'll tell you right now, I don't want season two.
Okay.
That's it. I just don't, because then I feel like it's going to get long in the tooth.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I mean, I think when you're telling that type of a story with an established character, especially one where we already know where it ends up.
Right.
Like, you don't need to give me a season two of that. Just tell me one little story, one nice, cohesive little story about something that I've never seen.
Yeah.
And then I'm okay with that. You know, it's different, like, you know, like the Ahsoka Tano show is different, right?
Oh, totally, because she's been gone.
Yeah.
She disappears, she reappears, she disappears. Right. And there's lots of stuff to be told her, because we don't know actually what happens to her.
Sure.
Now, I'm going to tell you, before you get into an Ahsoka, I watched the Star Wars Gallery thing about the final episode with Luke Skywalker.
Oh, we haven't talked about that.
We never talked about it.
Oh, boy.
And I loved every minute of that.
Unbelievable.
It was beautiful, right? Yeah. Deepfake, as predicted, as a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
With his face. But one of the things that as I was thinking about it, I was watching this, it makes me really nervous, because now that they've opened Pandora's box and they've given us Luke Skywalker, are people's expectations like, we're going to see lots of Luke Skywalker now in season 3 of The Mandalorian?
I mean, I think, because, you know, right now I think The Mandalorian has two audiences, right? If you have your hardcore Star Wars people, and you have like this big mainstream audience that, like I've said a million times, like I know people who have not seen any of the sequel trilogy movies. In fact, they may not have even seen the prequel trilogy movies, and they watched The Mandalorian and love it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for people like that, I think that there's probably a good chance that they will expect a lot of Luke Skywalker in season 3. I think for people like us, we know better.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, what you mean. Like, it's like, wow, that was, you know, you really, yeah, but, you know, they set themselves up for that, but, you know, listen.
And they did it respectfully.
Of course,
like,
they
listening
did.
Listening to Favreau and Filoni talk about like we're gonna do this, and you know, we know what we're doing.
Yeah,
I so trust them.
And especially when they were talking about, because at one point I guess it wasn't always gonna be Luke.
And I was like, they were saying like Plo Koon.
Yeah, and they're like. Like, could you imagine if, like, that wouldn't have even been, like, that would have been, like, whatever. Like, all of a sudden, people are like, who the hell is that? Yeah. Like, that's too deep of a cut, you know? Yeah. So
Filoni called it out. I mean, he said it exactly the way I was feeling about it. Like, you're going to see all of these things leading up to it being Luke Skywalker. You're going to know right off the bat it's Luke Skywalker, but you're going to doubt until you see him reveal his hood.
Yes.
That it's Luke Skywalker. And I was like, dude, that was so me.
That's Dog exactly how that happened.
Oh, green lightsaber? No way. Belt buckle? No way. X-Wing? No way. They're not going to do Luke's. That can't be Luke's. No. Why would you do Luke's? Is it Luke Skywalker? Oh, man. It's got to be Luke's. No, it's not Luke Skywalker.
Like, yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I felt. Yeah, you're right. And it was amazing, like, the attention to detail, right?
Yeah.
And this is one of the best things about watching those, like, behind-the-scenes things on that show, because it's like the attention, like, Dave Filoni obsessing over the colors.
Yeah.
Of, like, you know, of Luke's outfit.
His robes.
His robes.
Yeah.
Like, things like that, that's like, man, you know, like, that's...
It was a good call, though.
Yeah.
A lot of people assume that his robes are black, but they're actually brown.
Yeah.
Woo. That's a thing. But then there was the other thing, and I think this is kind of where they got tripped up on the face, that they were talking about Luke Skywalker looks different for everybody.
Yes.
And they had to, they wanted to come up with a face that would like resonate with most audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it gets really tricky, because his face looks a little wonky in some places. I mean, I get it. The technology is still developing. And actually, sure. Lucasfilm hired Shamook, who's been doing these deep fake videos. If anyone who doesn't, who's listening and doesn't know who Shamook is, it's Shamook on YouTube. Check out his deep fake clips where he replaces like certain scenes in movies with like different actors. Like he does like a whole scene of Solo with Harrison Ford's face on Alden and Aaron Reich's head or body. But yeah, so they hired him to help with some of their deepfake stuff. So it's just going to become more of a thing, which gets kind of really scary when you think about it. But I think the thing, you know, deepfake and Luke Skywalker's face aside, the thing that hit me in the gut was listening to Jon Favreau talk about his love and affection for R2-D2.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about how he felt watching R2 roll out onto set.
Yeah.
And hearing him and seeing him get like emotional again about that connection to that character, and he couldn't pinpoint exactly what it is about that moment. Like, I have that affinity for Yoda.
Right.
Because it brings me back somewhere, like,
yep,
with my dad and,
sure,
and all of that stuff. You know what I mean? So like I, man, I worship the ground that Jon Favreau walks on just for that.
Yeah.
Because he spoke right to me. I was like, dude, I know exactly what you're, yep, talking about. And I know every Star Wars fan, if you call yourself, if you don't have that moment, then you're not a Star Wars fan. I'm sorry, go, right, kick rocks.
Well, and that's the great, that's why I said before when it was like, you know, they do such a wonder, because they're obviously fans, right, first, yeah, clearly. But they just have this knack of being able to, they're fans, but they also are serious about telling their stories and attention to detail and stuff. So they just have this knack of fan service, but it's fan service that fits.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's really like a perfect balance. It's interesting when you talk about how they say like Luke Skywalker looks different to like everybody. It's something that I had never really thought of.
Yeah.
Until they mentioned that. But like, yeah, like, I mean, first of all, his face literally changed, you know, yeah, because of like the accident. So like he doesn't look, if you look at him in A New Hope, like he never looks like that again.
No, he doesn't look like that.
You know, and I would think that most people's image of Luke Skywalker is closer to the one from like Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, than it was in that first movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, different outfits, right? Like I could just, like right now, if you just say the name Luke Skywalker, like in my head, I run three different outfits. Like
New Hope,
Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi have all popped through my head.
To me, it is Farm Boy, Bespin, Black.
Yeah.
With the gray flap.
Yeah. It just, they all immediately fly into my head. It's crazy.
Those are like the three images, boom, 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 that just pop in my head. And then the other one is like Luke first revealing himself with the cloak on in Return of the Jedi at Jabba's palace.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he looks different in all of that stuff. I mean, you think about it, like when he takes his hood off to like when he's on the barge, he looks different. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very, very real consideration.
Yes.
And I'm sure the technology will give them even more license to you know, keep him on screen,
right,
in some capacity if they need to. But I know that these guys aren't going to do it willy nilly.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they paid so much respect to it that they didn't even say Luke Skywalker. They were like, oh, I forgot the name.
Because they weren't, I mean, they make a they point of saying it. Like, they, yeah.
You know, it was almost like a wish that they didn't want to speak out loud because it would go away.
Yes.
Yeah. I love those guys.
I mean, they even talk about, like, just the reaction, how they wanted the people in the scene to react.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, they, you know, they shouldn't know who that is. Like, that shouldn't really mean much, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. they just knew a Jedi.
Yeah.
Because they, yeah. they didn't, you know, so, like, a lot of that stuff, like, even that stuff down to that is really, it's really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Man, Star Wars is in great, great shape.
Yes.
It slipped a little bit. I'm gonna lie.
I'm gonna tell you right now, like, I'm glad in a lot of ways that The Mandalorian happened.
Yeah.
Because I believe that it's the reason
it is a
why
palate cleanser.
Yeah, like, and not only that, but we also, like, don't have to talk about, like, the Benioff and Weiss
God, right.
trilogy or whatever that was going to be, and like all these, like, I feel like they've fallen into their pocket now, where like they just are going to focus on the Disney Plus stuff and expand mm-hmm. the universe out and tell their stories, and then hopefully just see where things fall.
Yeah.
And if there's a story for a movie, they'll probably just do the movie, and like they're not going to probably be planning out grand trilogies and stuff like
yeah.
that anymore.
It's funny. I heard a rumor about things percolating on the movie side of things, and I quickly turned off. Like, I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear it.
Right.
Because I'm so in love with what's happening right yeah. now that I don't want to be distracted from sure. like potential possibility, rumor, you know, trilogy, where it could, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, keep and me I, here and now.
I'm okay with just standalone
universe.
Movies at this point because, you know, it's like,
I don't need a saga.
The prequel trilogy, you know, people say like, oh, the sequel trilogy, you know, if only they had it planned out, right? And there was one story that they were able to follow like ahead of time mm-hmm. and they knew where they were going, like it would have been more cohesive. And yeah, it probably would have. Well, it couldn't have been less cohesive, but then you think back and it's like, well, the prequel trilogy though, that's what the prequel trilogy was, right? Like it, they right. had, it was one big story
one thread,
that they
yeah.
told, right? And that didn't really work either because it's really all about the execution at the end of the day, but, and finding the right story. Like I think the prequel trilogy just didn't find the right story. It told a story, but it just wasn't the right story. Right.
I mean, there's only so much you can focus on Anakin Skywalker's turn to the dark side.
Sure. Yeah.
You gotta fill it in with, like, here's what's happening with the, you know, Galactic Senate and Empire
well,
and all that.
Not only that, but the problem is that I don't think that trilogy should have, I mean, it could have been about Anakin's turn to the dark side, but
yeah.
it should have been a story about the Clone Wars that happened to include Anakin's turn to the dark side.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it didn't have to be, you know, like Luke, like the original trilogy, it's about Luke, right? And Vader and that whole thing. And well, that's what it became anyway. And that arc, but like within that arc, really look at all the things that
the
happened.
Rebellion, yeah.
Sure. Like, and you establish all these other things. That prequel trilogy was just too laser focused on that whole idea of whatever, we've gone through all this. But
right.
the thing is that, you know, I'm just to avoid any of that, like the hell with the trilogies. Just tell me good stories. Give me a good movie. And you know what? If it works and you can make another one because people are interested in those characters or that story that you told, then do it.
Right.
But, you know, you'll be able to figure it out. And it could still be like, I would be okay with if we wound up with an accidental trilogy, you know, where it was like, you know, they give us a movie and it winds up doing well and people love the characters and the story, so they make another one and then they kind of, you know, and then you just wind up getting like three almost like standalone movies, like an Indiana Jones type of deal,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
where you
yeah,
get
yeah.
three standalone movies that involve the same characters and the same themes.
Wildly
and themes.
Different times.
Right,
yeah.
but they're different well, times, they're different stories, they're not intertwined.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Like, you could do something like that, I think would be yeah. cool.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. Just don't do Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
No,
and you'll
no.
be all right. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think at this point, like, just leave Skywalker.
Yes.
Leave it.
Well, we can't. I mean, how much more wait. Skywalker can you
do? You can't. Do? I mean, just leave it alone. I don't even get, I'm, you know, and honestly, I don't care about Rey. I don't care about Rey Skywalker either.
I don't either. And that's not, that's.
And that sucks, bro.
Right. It, because it should not have been like that.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And it's all just bad creative decisions.
Good job, JJ.
Yeah. I mean, literally one movie destroyed, for me anyway, the whole excitement behind that.
Finn. I lost total interest in Finn.
Well, they did too.
They lost interest in Finn.
I mean, yeah. Finn.
I mean, all right, I'm not going to go into this like Rise of Skywalker bashing fest because I will get my bat. I'll find that horse and continue to beat it.
No, it's crazy. It's like, you know, that moment. That trilogy should have ended in a way where, like, I was like, Rey, great, this is exciting, let's carry this on.
Yeah.
And it ended in just the cringiest way for me. And it was just like, great, I'm done now. I don't need to. That's wrapped up.
I'll tell you the exact moment where I was like, I'm done with this movie. And I'm done with this sequel trilogy. Was when she lightning shoots what we think is Chewbacca out. And in the next scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was right there, dude. That was the moment. I'm like, you couldn't give us 5 minutes of thinking that Chewbacca was dead at the hands of Rey? You couldn't give that to us for 5 minutes?
Right.
Oh, dude, you got no balls. I'm sorry.
Or even worse, just make it a thing, right?
Yeah.
Just let it be a thing.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine... She goes into battle with Palpatine, and Palpatine says, "You murdered your best friend."
Yeah, because that's one of those things that people say, "Well, it'd be too well." The damn thing was polarizing anyway, so why not take a shot and go down with your integrity and go down swinging?
That's what Ryan Johnson. No, I'm sorry, I'm going to stop.
Yeah,
that's what Ryan Johnson did essentially, right?
Yeah,
took a lot of those things and just chucked them right out the window. I'm sorry, threw him off a cliff. Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
I mean, and we could go, I mean, not now, but because it'll be 3 hours long, but like, and we could debate one day, because I don't think we've ever done this in this way, the merits of, you know, like I said earlier, you know, The Last Jedi now is, you can't subtract it, right, from the rest of the trilogy and isolate it. So the idea of like, did Rian Johnson do the right thing in hindsight by basically saying, I don't care what came before. I'm going to do what I want to do. Now, regardless of what you think of the movie, right, and the decisions that were made, like, was that the best thing for that, for the franchise and for that trilogy, to have a director basically go rogue and say, like, no, this is how I want the story to be. I don't care how it was handed off to me. I'm not going to look at it that way. Because there's a lot of instances of directors. Because I was talking to somebody the other day about the Halloween franchise, with Halloween Kills about to come out in a couple of weeks. And I was talking to them about, like, a movie like Rob Zombie's Halloween remake or Halloween 5 even, how those are like classic examples of directors essentially going rogue and saying, the hell with what came before. Like, I'm just going to do my thing my way, and I don't care that I'm making something that's part of, you know, an existing arc or whatever. Like, I'm just going to do my own thing. And Rian Johnson in a lot of ways did that.
I respectfully disagree. I don't think he went off on his own path. I think he saw something bigger. I think if Rian Johnson made The Last Jedi now, I think it would be more respected. I feel like it's a little ahead of his time to have done what he did. Because in my mind, he was expanding things.
Well, right, but
I think what he was doing to the story was, he was saying, we're not just gonna go, like, I'm not following this line straight. I'm gonna take that line. We're gonna continue moving it from left to right. But I'm gonna create other lines here. I'm gonna make it a little thicker. There was a lot more that he was putting into this, like, just And I've talked about this ad nauseum, but like, the nuances of Luke Skywalker not just being a static hero and saying, no, this guy's been through some shit. He's lost his way. This guy's, you know, like, that to me feels more Star Wars like and more Luke Skywalker than I think what people just want the heroic, oh, I'm swashbuckler, swing my lightsaber here. Well, everything he gave us in The Mandalorian, which I love, but like seeing what he is in The Mandalorian punctuates who he is in The Last Jedi and who he ultimately becomes.
Right, that's talking just quality, right, of how you think the story he told and you saying like hindsight, like if he made it now, it'd be like, I'm talking about in its time, right? In the context of what he was tasked with doing, right? Which was basically picking up a story that was just part of a trilogy.
The story of Rey.
In the middle of his trilogy. You know, did he do the right thing ultimately by that trilogy by just veering off in such directions where it was just like, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's why I say it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah,
because,
we got to get into that.
You know, maybe you could blame the follow up to say, well, they chose to go back to the original concepts, you know, and revisit it, and that throws everything off. But it's an interesting conversation to have, I think, because it's like, you know, what is the bigger job there for Rian Johnson? Like, is it the job to like make it his story, or is it the job to continue on with the story the natural story, right? I mean, I think anybody knows, like, if you were taking on that movie, where the natural story elements would be, and he kind of disregarded a lot of that.
You mean like the predictable shit?
Well, yeah, I mean,
like,
that's
Skywalker turns and says, "I'm happy to train you. Finally, someone."
Well, not even that. Just more of like the stuff with Rey, and you know, the stuff with, you know, with like he kind of changed up the Finn stuff a lot, you know, and the Finn Rey thing. Changed that relationship changed dramatically in that movie, and like he did go in other, you know, directions and stuff with a few things. I mean, the Luke thing, that's different. That's because that wasn't anything set up in the first movie. I mean, yes, we see Luke at the very end of Force Awakens, but I mean, literally, he's standing there. So like if they had made Luke kind of like a more of like a noble, happy-go-lucky guy in Force Awakens, and then Rian Johnson did what he did. That's different.
But then he wouldn't have been hiding.
Correct. But so what we did with Luke, that's a different conversation because that was an original. We'll call it an original creation of Rian Johnson.
But I think the breadcrumbs were planted by J.J. Abrams, because if that were the case, the First Order exists. Leia is fighting the First Order. In The Force Awakens, something happened to Luke Skywalker.
Oh, sure.
He is in high, you know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So so he's not in a good place in The Force Awakens.
Correct.
Like if we said The Last Jedi didn't exist, and we were to answer our own questions or the questions posed to us by J.J. Abrams of where is Luke Skywalker, like the hero was gone.
Yeah.
Rian Johnson didn't put him on that island.
No, but what Rian Johnson did choose, and this is the one thing I disagree with him on mainly, is that chucking that lightsaber was a bad decision because he has to be more aware. And this is where I say, like, sometimes you could be so self-indulgent. He has to be more aware that that was the
That was a big old middle finger to everybody.
Well, not just a middle finger, but it's like, yeah, like The Force Awakens ends on a cliffhanger, basically. And it's like people get to see Luke Skywalker, who is a beloved figure, for the first time in years. And you're waiting, you know, whatever it was, a year, 2 years, to see what happens when she reaches out.
Yeah.
And presents that to him, and like for him to just be like, take it, throw it over, was like, really, dude? Like, come on. Like, it wasn't even like that, was almost like not even smart. Like, you still could have told the same story. And I think if he had not done that and he had handled that scene differently, where like Luke maybe looks at it and he's like, that's not me anymore, and just walks away, I feel like that would have been a better way to do it. And I almost feel like people would have been a little bit more accepting of everything that came after yes, you still were going to get people that were like, that's not my Luke Skywalker. I get it. But there's nothing you could do with those people.
Yeah, that was a gut punch.
But and it was also, I think it was a mistake. But again, though, that was like a, you know, I think that sets a bad tone. And I don't know what you...
I applaud it. I do. I love it. You know, I love it because I am a person that I don't like already knowing where I think things are going. And when I sat down for The Last Jedi, I think everybody was in this, like, oh, this expectation mode. Like, he's going to grab it and be like, thank you. Or, you know, here we go. You know, we're going to go down this road of, like, the traditional master-apprentice thing. And when he, I remember this, like, vividly. When he chucked that lightsaber, yo, I laughed my ass off. And I went, oh, shit, we are in for a different ride. And so in my mind, like, you have to do that.
Because
he knew the, I mean, obviously he knew the story. So like, that's a moment that's like, you're not in, take all of your expectations and literally keep them with that lightsaber sitting on the edge of that cliff.
Yeah. I just think that it's the way he did it though, was a little too, it was almost trolling. You know, like I said,
agree, that's kind of why I like.
There's it. A way but, that you could have, because at the end of the day, this is Star Wars, right? It's not the Iliad or the Odyssey. It's Star Wars. It's a swashbuckling space adventure, right? That's what Star Wars is. It's what it's best at. It's what it always will be. Yes, it has ideas and things like that. But like for me, it's like you could have still accomplished the same thing. Like you wouldn't have expected him to look at it and say, no, I'm not that person anymore, and just walked away either. Like, that still would have been a surprise, right?
Or destroy this.
Yeah, or, like, you know, or even just if he walked away.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just a way you could, like, I feel like the way he does, and he kind of just, even the look on his face.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and he just walks away from it.
He just walks away, he throws the thing, and then, like, I don't know. So I just wonder, like, it was popping into my head before as we were talking about, like, trilogies and stuff like that. It was like, you know, when I said you can't subtract The Last Jedi anymore from that trilogy and you have to look at it as a whole, I just wonder if... I mean, yes, I think we know that they would have been better off if, you know, they had one direction, one creative direction to follow. And that would have been it. And maybe, you know, it would have been better off if you had Rian Johnson direct the whole trilogy.
Yeah.
Rather than, because clearly Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams were on very different pages. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think it was probably a bad mix. You know, like, you either need to let somebody like a J.J. Abrams direct the entire thing, or at least direct the first one and then maybe hand off to some of his people, you know, like a Brad Bird or, you know, some of the people that are, like, affiliated with him. Yeah, like Lucas. So, like, you know, Lucas didn't – he directed A New Hope and didn't direct the other two movies. He handed those movies off.
Right.
But still guided the path. You know, you probably would have been better off doing that. It's just interesting. And it's funny because, like, Rian Johnson, you know, he's gone back and, you know, he's had some successes, obviously. I wonder if, like, anybody's ever going to hand the reins to, like, a major property to him again.
Time will tell.
Yeah. Certainly interesting.
Time will tell.
All right.
Should we close with What If?
Oh, yeah. What If?
Yeah. I got to say, it's not my favorite episode.
No, this one was,
I like what they were doing with it. I like where they're going with it. I like that it can't always be serious.
Yeah.
But I was not in the mood for it.
No, I kind of agree.
I just was not in the mood. I don't know if it was the day. that I was watching.
Probably not.
I was, you know
what it is,
stressing me out.
You know what it
is
for me? For me, I think the whole time I'm watching it, I'm sitting there saying, like, we've seen too much now of comedic Thor.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, Thor, they got to be really careful because it's like, you know, Thor can't be like the slapstick like goof.
Yeah, a jock.
Yeah.
Like, dummy.
Right.
I agree with you, man. Yeah. I was like, this was Ragnarok, like, turned up to 150.
Yeah. Or fat. And he might as well have been, like, fat Thor.
Even that, though, like, had some... I say that, and I'm, like, thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, there was, you know, there was some... There was obviously some PTSD for fat Thor to exist.
Sure, but, yeah.
Like...
It's just the mentality that he had, you know, just like he's kind of was just goofy.
He's a bro.
Yeah.
Bro.
Yeah.
You know, bro Thor, like having parties and stuff like that. And he's scared of his mom. Like,
I also didn't get like the idea was like, what if Thor was an only child?
Right.
Well, OK. So he'd be an idiot. Like, what does that have to do with anything? Like, I don't understand.
Maybe a spoiled brat is what it is.
I guess, but you could be a spoiled not be an idiot, though.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know.
I forgot the rat. I mean, like, at first when I heard it, I was like, wait, what? But then I forgot about why they're, you know, Loki. Well, I guess it's because Loki brings the best out of.
Is that where they were going?
Yeah.
You know what?
I mean, and it plays to a lot of the stuff that Mobius was saying to Loki.
Yeah.
Like you are the catalyst for other people's good.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately where it was coming from.
Like, I guess Thor doesn't know they didn't do a good job of really connecting.
No, they really didn't.
Yeah.
Especially when you meet Loki, and Loki's actually like a pretty level-headed ice giant.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like. Yeah. It, you know,
it just to
I think
me.
The thing I was most intrigued with was like all the voice actors.
Sure,
that was it
for me. The thing that is that, you know, Loki he's always been a more interesting character, but like now especially, like his character has so much depth now, and there's just so much to that character. It's such a great character that it's like, you know, Thor is almost like regressing.
Right.
And like Loki now is this like so as Loki becomes like deeper and more complex, like Thor just seems to becoming just like a caricature, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's a meathead.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, they didn't do him any favors when he's with the Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's actually kind of tricky.
You're right.
And you know, Star-Lord is in the next Thor movie.
Yes.
So, I you know, and we'll see. We'll see. I'm with you though. I'm with you. It's getting a little much for me.
Yeah. At some point, this character, and maybe they will, but at some point, the character has to become a little bit more serious. And he's Thor, God's sake. Yeah.
He's
God.
Mother effing Thor.
Yeah, so like, you know, he needs to act like it again at some point.
But maybe that's the brilliance of getting Jane Foster to be Thor.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm totally speculating. I have no idea. No clue.
Right. I mean, you would hope that it's...
But, you know, I've seen images and behind-the-scenes shots and... You know, there's a real 80s hair vibe going with Thor. And I'm like, okay, let's. And he's like, you know, in great shape. So, like, fat Thor, I think, is gone.
Oh, yeah. But
we'll see. I mean, and who knows if it's actually. If this is actually going to be. I mean, it's got to be. But I was going to say, who knows if it's an actual Thor movie? Like, it's the Thor. What if this is a multiverse version of Thor?
You know, my Love and Thunder?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who knows? Anything.
Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know.
Anything's possible now.
Correct. Yeah. I think until between Spider-Man and then Doctor Strange, like until Doctor Strange is out, like we shouldn't assume anything, right, at this point.
God, man, Spider-Man. God, I think that's like a game. That's like, I'm so intrigued what's going to happen to Spider-Man and what's going to happen with, you know what, this multiverse thing may be a great way of them pushing Spider-Man completely out of their universe and throwing him into Sony's.
It could be. I mean, we've been saying this, right?
He says no way home, right? Maybe he just gets trapped in the Venomverse or the other Spider-Man-verse. The other Spider-Verse.
Yeah. And, I mean, you never know. I mean, it's...
He's no longer in the MCU because he's not in that universe anymore.
You know, I would like to think that Marvel Studios has an awareness of what people's expectations are at this point for No Way Home.
Yeah.
Now, I got to be careful when I say that because I understand that there are more people out there that have no expectations at all for that movie than people like us who are sitting back expecting, you know, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield and all this other stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. I get it. But they do know that there is a hardcore segment of the fan base that has expectations, right, for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to think that they are prepared to deliver on that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, like in wrestling, like AEW, right? They sold out the United Center in Chicago on like 2 weeks' notice based on a whisper and a wink and a hint that CM Punk might be debuting on that show.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew all along that that was the case. They just didn't announce it because they didn't need to, right? And it became this really cool surprise that like most people went expecting, but there was still that doubt that maybe it's not going to happen, you know, and that type of stuff. So like, you know, it's the same thing. Like, I think a lot of people are going to be going. Now, we don't know what kind of trailers are going to come out. Maybe they will eventually reveal more. But let's say they don't. I think they have to know that people are still going to go to the movie expecting something. And, you know, who knows? I mean, we've been down this road before, right? The Mephisto thing, you know, where it's like if you know, you don't want to let expectations skew the way you move a movie.
Right.
But so I think Marvel's got to be very careful the next couple of months with how they choose to market this movie, depending on what it really is. Yeah. You know,
I'm surprised, to be honest with you, that now that Shang-Chi is in theaters and you know, has been doing fairly well,
yeah,
but is on the way out, that they haven't turned up the Eternals marketing arm. Because that sucker needs it.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird. I would have expected. I mean, I have seen some TV spots here and there. I mean, I don't really watch a lot of commercials.
I mean,
that's
probably me cutting the cord and not seeing any TV whatsoever.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure that they've been running them. But like, even like where I do have to watch commercials, which is during live sports, you would think that would be the time to see. And I don't. Like I said, I've seen a couple of spots for it, but not much. You know,
promotional stuff.
The things that I have watched live, right? So like wrestling or like football, you know, whatever. Like things like baseball, like where I do have to watch the commercials. Like I have not, I don't recall really seeing much for Eternals. In fact, I still see Shang-Chi commercials sometimes, you know. And Shang-Chi debuting November 12th on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
It's Disney Plus Day or whatever they're calling it.
I can't wait for all of that. They're dropping a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm waiting there with my mouth open.
Yeah. So,
on that note.
Yeah.
Oh, that's getting late.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We didn't think we would have much to talk about today, so I'm glad we didn't, and it's like our longest episode and God knows when. But we should just at least answer Phil's question.
He
asked us about the Oscars, because it's Oscar season coming up, so they're about to drop the Oscar hopefuls. You know, honestly,
Say what? Is Candyman on the list?
Yeah. I don't even know. Like, I used to love award shows. Like an Oscar season, like I would have notes and stuff back in the day.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't watch the award shows anymore, and I don't even know what the possible contenders are. And who knows? Like this year, it's weird, man. I even know. Like, you know,
I have no idea what's out there.
No,
none.
Yeah. Because it's basically been like the big ticket movies, right? That,
yeah.
You know, I mean, who knows? Like,
it could be stuff from HBO Max, you know, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been following what the what movies are going to be coming out in the next couple of months that are shooting for that. But I'll tell you what, whatever they are, it's not on my list because there's only a couple of movies that I actually care about seeing at this point. You know, Spider-Man, Eternals, which I'm not even that excited about, you know, Bond I'll watch. But like, other than that, like I'm at the point now where it's like, I want big, fun movies.
Yeah.
Like that's where I'm at. And maybe that's part of the reason why I want to go see Venom now, because it's like, I just want big fun. If I'm going to go to the movies now, I want big fun movies. And I don't know.
You have a good time. You don't want to come out of the damn thing. Like,
even if I'm watching something at home, like I just don't want, I don't want something that's going to bring my head down. Not right now. You know, maybe 6 months from now, I'll get back to that, but whatever, like, no. But now there's way too much fun stuff out there with movies and TV and stuff like that. Like, you know, like I was saying earlier, with franchises, and I mean, we're about to get bombarded with, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars and Batman stuff and superhero stuff and Marvel stuff and all this cool stuff. It's like, whatever. Keep your art house films. I just don't care about that stuff right now. It's not where I'm at. So, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right.
Cool. So on that note, let's get out of here.
Yeah. Let's go to thefanboygarage.com. You can check out all our stuff there. Of course, you could find us on the social medias, the Facebook, the Instagram, and the Twitter at thefanboygarage. And you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AARonSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. I will also be at the upcoming New York Comic Con, masked up and vaccinated, I should say.
Nice.
I forgot the name, the weekend, but I guess it's the 9th, Friday, Saturday. So for those who are listeners and will be at New York Comic Con, come seek me out. I'll be the dude wearing the black Fanboy Garage t-shirt. Anyways, thank you again, guys, so much for listening to episode 148 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week. Take it easy.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.